everyone. Like they said earlier, my name is Elise and I am on the high school staff here. I've been on staff for about 3 years and part of this community for about 3 years. So it's really special to be up here with you guys today, and I'm really excited about it. So, and Mexicali is coming, and as Michael Santangelo said, you should really come. My first year, everyone talked about the tacos, and I was like, a taco's a taco. How good can it get? Well, go to Mexicali and you'll find out, because those are the best tacos I've ever had. And I've never found anything here like it. Serious, I've looked. Okay, anyways, so it's Christmas time, which is so wonderful and so fun. But to be quite honest, part of Christmas for me is really, really strange. Now, not all of it. I love all of it. But there's some parts that are weird. The commercialized part of it, I love. Maybe that's bad to say, but it's beautiful out there, right? You see so many stores all lit up. Homes look beautiful. People are nicer to you because it's Christmas, unless they're Scrooges and Grinches. They're out there, though. It's all right. We love them anyways. There's movies that are devoted just to Christmas, my favorites being Home Alone and The Holiday. There's fun songs to sing that we got to sing some tonight. I love all of them except for one. I'm not telling you which one. And we get to do fun events. Last night, the high school ministry, with all the campuses, we took a truckload of high schoolers up to Pier 39 and we rode trolleys around the city, singing Christmas carols, yelling at people to kiss each other or to dance. Some of them did, most of them, well, some of them flipped us off too, but that's okay. And then we ended the night at Ghirardelli Square with sundaes and shakes, and it was so fun. And if any of that sounds fun to you, I have a wonderful serving opportunity for you. Come talk to me after. We'd love to have you with high school ministry. But anyways, I love that part of Christmas. I love the familial part of Christmas. You know, at Christmas time, your friends start to feel more like family, especially if you're not from here and your family's far away. But then when you actually are with your family, the time together is just a little bit more special because it's Christmas. But the one part of Christmas that has struck me as strange, is not the fact that for one night a year, we are okay with a random intruder coming into our house, Santa Claus. But the part of Christmas that has always struck me as weird, strange, a little bit abnormal, is the real Christmas story. Outside of the magic of the season, when you sit and think about the real Christmas story, it's quite fantastic. There's this ordinary girl ready to start her life as a wife, ready to leave her father's home and to start life with a new husband. There's this normal guy preparing his life for this new wife to come in. And then all of a sudden, she's pregnant. And then there's angels showing up everywhere. And we learn from these angels that a virgin has become pregnant. And not like Jane the Virgin pregnant. Pregnant because God was ready to send his son here. Pregnant through the power of the Holy Spirit. A real human pregnancy engineered by divine means. And then they travel really far, and she has to ride a donkey super pregnant, which sounds awful. I wouldn't know, but it sounds awful. And to make the story even more out of the ordinary, Jesus is born in a barn, and somehow they make it out of there with no infections and leading to their immediate death. It's a strange story. And then there's more angels and random visitors coming to this new family who's probably just desperately trying to keep this baby alive, because not only is it a baby, but it's the Son of God. And all these random people are like, wow, I've been waiting my whole life to see this baby. Okay. This story is insane. It's out of this world. And there have been many times as I think about my faith and I'll just think about God's story and stories like this, and all of a sudden I'm like, do I really believe that? That's weird. Like, a girl became pregnant because God? All right. The Christmas story is peculiar, and it's just fantastic and just strange enough to know that it couldn't come from our imaginations, but had to be rooted. Its creation had to be rooted in God. It's not a fairy tale. It doesn't start with once upon a time and end with happily ever after. It's a story about real people who experienced these things in real life. And these people had to be brave. They had no option. They had to deal with and tackle situations that had never happened before. They had no guidebook, no mentors, no one they could go to except God to figure this stuff out. These were situations never experienced before by unassuming people to tell the start of the greatest story ever told. So we're in the second week of our Christmas series called Becoming Fearless. And last week, Michael talked to us about how God became man. And when that happened, when God wanted to announce that he was coming here, angels were popping up all over the place to tell people about this. And they started their message with "Fear not." So we're going to look at one of those encounters today, and we're going to see what happened when the angel visited Joseph. So our story picks up in Matthew chapter 1, verse 18, and here's how it goes. This is how the birth of Jesus Christ took place. When Mary, his mother, was engaged to Joseph, before they were married, she became pregnant by the Holy Spirit. Joseph, her husband, was a righteous man. Because he didn't want to humiliate her, he decided to call off their engagement quietly. And as he was thinking about this, an angel from the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, because the child she carries was conceived by the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you will call him Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." Now all of this took place so that what the Lord had spoken through the prophet would be fulfilled. "Look, a virgin will become pregnant and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel." Emmanuel means God with us. When Joseph woke up, he did just as the angel from God commanded and took Mary as his wife. But he didn't have sexual relations with her until she gave birth to a son. Joseph called him Jesus. To tell this story, Matthew wants us as readers to step into Joseph's shoes. And we get a really unique perspective of how Jesus came here from Joseph and what this all would mean for him. So who is Joseph? He appeared to be a regular guy. He was a righteous man who followed God's law. He was going to become a husband. In a few chapters later into Matthew, we learn that he was a carpenter, so he had a job. From the verses right before this passage, we learn that he had a famous great-grandfathers, King David. And from what we know, that didn't give him any kind of special privileges. It's just part of who he was, who his family was. Before Joseph and Mary could get married, before they could start their new life together, something goes amiss. Mary is pregnant, and Joseph had nothing to do with it. Can you imagine how he must have felt? I mean, keep in mind, back then, engagement was more than it is today. Engagement was more than just a promise to get married or an okay to start planning a wedding. At this point, to end the relationship, they would have to go through something similar to a divorce. So before Joseph even gets married, he's getting divorced. And he probably felt confused and betrayed and mad and sad and disappointed. And then he had to, through all those emotions, go and end this relationship. Then enter the angel of the Lord. And he tells Joseph, "Sorry, dude, you're screwed. Better luck with the next girl." No, he doesn't do that. Seeing if you guys are paying attention. No, the angel tells Joseph, "Do not be afraid." He doesn't tell him, "Don't be mad, don't be sad, don't be confused." His opening line to him is, "Do not be afraid." And while I'm sure sleeping and dreaming Joseph probably was freaking out a little bit, like, "Oh my gosh, what is happening in this dream?" It wasn't, "Don't be afraid," in that sense. He was talking about fear in a different way. So why is he telling Joseph not to be afraid? He's telling him not to be afraid to take Mary as his wife. To marry her would put their whole family, their whole lives moving forward, at risk. She would be disgraced, he would be seen as a fool, and their child a bastard. It's not like he can go telling everyone what happened to his dream. No one would believe him, and they would just think he was dumb. He was afraid that marrying her was the wrong thing to do. As someone who was righteous and followed the law, it was expected for him to divorce her. And this is what, just so you guys know, this is what the law says about women who aren't virgins when they get married. So this is in Deuteronomy 22, verses 20 through 21. It says, however, if the claim is true and proof of the young woman's virginity cannot be produced, then the city elders will bring the young woman to the door of her father's house. The citizens of that city must stone her until she dies, because she acted so sinfully in Israel by having extramarital sex while still in her father's house. Remove such evil from your community. It's a little harsh. A few verses later, we find this, and this would probably fit more what Mary would have to deal with. If a young woman who is a virgin is engaged to one man and another man meets up with her in town and has sex with her, you must bring both of them to the city gates there and stone them until they die. The young woman, because she didn't call for help in the city, and the man because of the fact that he humiliated his neighbor's wife. Remove such evil from your community. The fact that Mary turned up pregnant wasn't just a blow to his ego or an inconvenience or a dilemma for him about whether or not he wanted to raise another man's baby. This was a serious offense to the community, to the families involved, and mostly to God. It was considered evil and punishable by death. Joseph had every right to take this to trial and embarrass her publicly to save himself from the scandal. And no one would have blamed him one bit for it. One of my cousins, his name is Neil, he's a lot older than me. He had been dating this girl, Laurel, for as long as I could remember. She came to Christmases and Thanksgivings for years and years. And, you know, all of us started to wonder, are they ever going to get married? And eventually he proposed, and it was exciting. We had a family wedding to get ready for. And about a month before the wedding, we find out that the wedding's been called off. And then a little bit later, my aunt calls and starts to tell us why this wedding was called off. Well, apparently Laurel, on a bachelorette party weekend, went out in Palm Springs, and she cheated on my cousin Neil. And when he came back, he found out. And at first, they were going to work through it and, you know, just, like, repair the relationship. She was sorry. They were still going to get married and everything. And then we found out she was pregnant by that other guy. At that point, wedding was off. We were all sad. You know, this was someone who had become part of our family. But no one was more heartbroken than Neil. The woman he thought he was going to start his life with a couple months before their wedding decided to behave that way. And when he called it off, all of his behavior, all of his actions, no one questioned his motives or thought bad of him because he was wounded and heartbroken, and we understood that this was something he should have never gone through. Joseph would have had the same benefit of the doubt from the community. They would have seen it as an offense Mary committed against Joseph, against their families, against the whole community, and against God. And Joseph had made up his mind. And the only thing that was going to change it was a message straight from God. A message saying, don't be afraid to take Mary as your wife. God is telling him, I know the situation is weird and out of the ordinary. I know that it looks like everything is wrong. I know this isn't what you expected or what you wanted, but don't be afraid. I'm the one doing this. I'm the reason she's pregnant, and I'm going to surprise the world with this baby. And I feel like at the end of the message, there's this unspoken question. It's almost as if God is saying, I'm going to do this. Joseph, will you be a part of it? Joseph had one idea for his life. He would marry this nice girl from the community. They would live a normal life, a life following God and waiting for the Messiah to come to deliver them. They would have children and live like everyone else around them. They would have a life like their parents before them and how their children would after. And then his seemingly normal life starts to blow up. The nice girl that he thought he was going to marry, well, now she's pregnant. And slowly, or maybe very quickly, the life he had imagined, expected, prepared for, slipped away. Do you know what it's like to have an idea, a dream, or expectation of how your life will go, and then have it completely thrown out the window in a moment? We all have a plan or expectation for certain things in our lives, right? Maybe you plan to work at a specific company or at a specific job, but after so many applications and interviews, you still don't have that job, you still don't work at that company, and you're frustrated. Or maybe you thought you would have traveled the world or at least seen part of it, but you can't get more than a couple days off without your boss freaking out, and then you have to get right back at it to do whatever they need you to do. Or maybe you planned on being married at this point in your life. Maybe you planned on having kids already. My Instagram and Facebook feeds are full of a bunch of friends that live in the Midwest, so they post pictures of their second and third child by now. I posted an Instagram this weekend of me trying to do a swirl on the ice when we went ice skating. It's very different. That's okay. But maybe just like that, like you wanted to be married, but you're still single and you're still not a parent. Or maybe you planned on owning your own home by now, but you moved here, so. Maybe you thought at this point you'd start to feel like an adult, but no matter what you do, your family still treats you like you're 13 years old. You still see yourself as 13 years old. I remember the other day we were decorating at the bank, which is the student center down the street, and half of the light strand wouldn't work, and I was like trying to make it work, and I looked at one of my coworkers and I was like, I feel like adults know how to do this and I do not. Fix it for me. And I walked away. But you can't seem to grow up in your family's eyes. Or maybe you thought your relationship with your siblings, your step-siblings, your parents would be repaired if it was broken and healed, but you're still at odds. You still dread seeing them and being with them because you don't fit in, and going home is going to be hard. Joseph had plans. He had dreams, and he thought things were going to go one way, and then they just didn't. Along the way, as we live as followers of Jesus, sometimes he takes our plans and just shakes it up. And it could be small things. It could be little things like you didn't get into your top school when you were going to college, so you went to another one. And now on the other side of it, you can see how God used that in your life, and you're glad. It's a good thing that happened. And it could be big things, too. You planned on working in one field, and now because God did or said something, you're in a place that you never thought you'd live in a job you never thought you'd be doing, in a community you never expected. I know that that's true of me. I didn't expect to be here at all. Whether they're the small things that God does to alter our plans or our way of thinking, or it's the big life shifts that change the whole trajectory of your lives, God is inviting you to be a part of his story and a part of bringing his kingdom here. God can do everything he wants in the world without us. He can bring his kingdom here. He can do everything to redeem all the people that want to be redeemed without any of our help. But he invites us in. He invites us to be a part of his story. He trusts us to do his kingdom work here. And that's what a lot of us here are about, right? We've said yes to being a part of God's kingdom. And being a part of that life, living life with God, can be hard sometimes, and sometimes just downright terrifying. So why is it hard? Why is it scary? Well, pastor and author Tim Keller wrote a new book, just came out, called Hidden Christmas. I read it because I knew I was going to give this talk. And I'm just going to be honest. When he talks about Joseph and what it meant for him to say yes to God, yes to this, he says that it means certain things for us. And what that means for us is it takes a certain amount of courage to follow Jesus. First, he says it's the courage to take on the world's disdain. And second, the courage to give up your right to self-determination. So for Joseph, choosing to marry Mary was going to be a big hit to his reputation. And everyone in the community was going to look down on him because of this. This was not the popular choice or the normal choice or a choice that anyone else would have made. Here for us in one of the most unchurched areas in the world, being a Christian is weird. People potentially think less of you. They don't understand your choices. They don't get why you don't sleep around with everybody, or why you don't get passed out drunk every weekend, or why you just decide to live differently, to spend your money differently. Recently, I was on a family trip to Las Vegas. I know that sounds weird, but We went. It was my sister's 21st birthday. But nothing was crazy, don't worry. Anyways, I was there and I wanted to get my hair cut because I was like, I don't know what else to do in Vegas. I'll go get a haircut. So it's this haircut. And sorry, just kidding. Or not just kidding, it is this haircut. But anyways, as I'm sitting in the chair and the hairdresser's, you know, cutting away, she asks the one question that I know will halt all conversation for the rest of this appointment. And it came early, so I knew it was going to be a long appointment. And she asked me, so what do you do for a living? So I smiled at her. I said, oh, I work at a church running a high school ministry running the high school ministry. And then I got silence. But actually, no, I didn't get silence. I got, oh. And then silence for a really long time. And I don't know if she was like trying to just figure out what all those words meant, because maybe she just had never heard someone say that string of words in a sentence before. Or she was trying to figure out what to say to a church lady. You know, maybe she just was caught off guard. Or trying to figure out what a church lady was doing in Las Vegas. I'm not sure. But it definitely halted all conversation for at least 5 to 10 minutes. As a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, people aren't always going to understand why you do what you do, why you live your life a certain way, why you choose to believe certain things. And sometimes it's no big deal, but sometimes it just sucks. It sucks to be a part of with people that just don't understand you or don't understand why you do things. Second, to give up your self-determination means that when you decide to follow Jesus, you give up on the terms and conditions that you have for your life. For Joseph, it meant adopting a baby that he didn't even get to name, which was a big deal for them. Naming was a sign of control. It was a father's right to name their child, and Joseph had to adopt this baby and then didn't get to name him. God names him. For us, it means that we give up control of our lives. It means that we're no longer the Lord of our little worlds. It means submitting to Jesus and being obedient to what he asks of us. And sometimes that looks really different than what we expected or what we wanted to do. It might mean not going for that promotion or new job because you know it'll suck all your time away and you want to make sure you have space and time in your life for other things. It might mean taking steps towards building your community at work and letting the people that see you almost every day see the full picture of you, and you let them see that you're a Christian, someone who follows Jesus, someone who loves Jesus. For me in the past, it meant ending a relationship with a guy I really cared about and really liked because he wasn't a Christian, and ultimately that relationship was pulling me away from God and not towards him. None of this is easy. Because unlike anything else in this world, God asks for everything. He asks us to love him with all of our heart, all of our soul, all of our mind, and all of our strength. He doesn't want us to just live politely and show up at church once a week. He wants all of our lives to be permeated with him, and he asks us to give over everything to trust him. And he asks, so that means we can say no. We can say no altogether or say no to part of it. And that's kind of what following Jesus is about, right? It's learning how to say yes to Jesus with all of our lives, one step at a time. It's turning the fear that you have and giving stuff over into faith with God. It's saying yes with our dating life. It's learning to say yes with our money. It's learning to say yes with our jobs, learning to say yes with your friends, learning to say yes with your family. Sometimes that's hard. And learning to say yes to loving him in everything. Following Jesus is trusting him more and more with our whole lives, as he asks. For Joseph, hearing who this child was changed everything. And the same can be true for us. The more we know about God, the more we know his character, know what he wants for the world, the more we know who Jesus is, the easier it is to say yes to him. When you trust the person who's asking you to do something crazy, becomes a lot less scary and a lot more exciting. Joseph, who was someone who followed the law, he would have had a relationship with God. He would have studied the scriptures. He would have known his character. He would have talked with God. He would be able to trust him and have faith when God said, "Do not be afraid." Joseph could have walked away, could have woken up from that dream and thought, "Well, that was weird. I think I ate too close to going to sleep. Or maybe that wine was a little bad and I shouldn't have had that. Wow, my brain is just playing some tricks on me." Or he could have woken up and said, "Yeah, right, God, easy for you to say. I can't just go and marry her. She's ruined. I'll be ruined. What you're asking from me is too much, and I just don't want to do it." But Joseph didn't do that. It says he woke up and did just as the angel had commanded. And he did it because he knew who God was. And if God said this was legit, he was in. So what could God be calling you to step into today? Where has God been leading you to go? What could he be asking you to start doing or stop doing? God's going to make stuff happen. Are you going to be a part of it? Are you going to say yes? Are you going to wake up and do what God commands? Joseph's life probably wasn't easy, but it had got to have been incredible. His life probably wasn't always happy, but it was purposeful. The life of marrying a pregnant girl and dealing with the community's reaction and raising Jesus, a son that was not his, a son that was God's, was not what he had planned. But it was a front row seat to see God redeeming the world. Joseph was probably afraid many, many, many times after that moment. Every day he had to choose to keep Mary as his wife. As people in town started talking, as she started showing, he continued to make that choice every day. And when he was afraid, when he doubted his choice, I wonder if he ever replayed God's message to him, that do not be afraid, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid, because this is God's doing. When he felt fear, I bet he thought about that angel and remembered and held on to that message. Sometimes God may ask you to do things that are not easy or just way harder than you ever imagined. And you know what? Fear will probably creep in. You'll probably feel afraid every once in a while. But remember those words. Remember God's words to you. Do not be afraid. God is inviting you to become a part of what he's doing in this, in your life and in this world. He wants you to be a part of it. Will you step into that? Like Joseph, every day we have the opportunity to say yes, to take that step, to live fearlessly, trusting that God is with us every step of the day. Will you pray with me? Jesus, thank you so much that you invite us into your story, that we get to be meaningful parts of bringing your kingdom here. And Lord, as we feel afraid, as we feel nervous with what you have for us, God, I pray that we remember your words and can hold on to them. Do not be afraid. Lord, place people in our lives who will remind us of that fact every day, that we do not have to be afraid when we have life with you. Amen.